Hi, I'm Ted Burns. I'm a neurologist at the University of Virginia. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with General Sam Wilson about the topic of leadership. And let me first provide a little background to this interview. I've had the pleasure of getting to know General Wilson over the past 8 years. And during this time, I've learned a great deal from him. One topic he's discussed with me and also with the residents and fellows in the neurology program at UVA is leadership. He recently spoke to us again about leadership and healthcare, and it was at this time that the idea occurred to me to record some of his thoughts on the topic, and that is why we've set up this interview. Before I interview him about leadership, let me briefly introduce General Wilson. General Wilson had an approximately 40-year active military career where he divided his service between special operations and intelligence assignments. During his active military career, he held a number of positions, and I'd like to just list a few of them. He worked on the Operations Coordinating Board as a consultant on Soviet affairs. He worked in the CIA's clandestine services, serving part of his time as a CIA case officer running a series of clandestine operations against the Soviet Union from a cover office in West Berlin. He was a director of instruction of the U.S. Army Special Warfare School in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. General Wilson was assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Special Operations, serving in that capacity and playing a key role at such critical moments as the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. General Wilson worked on doctrinal concepts pertaining to the role and mission of U.S. military advisors, especially in insurgency, counterinsurgency, and nation-building environments. He played a key role in the establishment of the Military Assistance Officers Program. He was U.S. Defense Attaché in the U.S. Embassy in Moscow at the height of the Cold War. He was deputy to the Director of Central Intelligence for the Intelligence Community. He was later the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. During his career, he received many military awards, decorations, and badges. After his active military career, General Wilson was president of Hampton-Sydney College from 1992 to 2000. In 2000, he was named president emeritus of Hampton-Sydney College and the Wheat Professor of Leadership. In 2007, he was named the first Wilson Fellow in the Samuel V. Wilson Center for Leadership in the Public Interest at Hampton-Sydney College. And I'm leaving many things out, but I thought now we would focus on the topic of leadership. And there are a number of things we could talk about with General Wilson about leadership, but what I thought we would do is talk about his list of leadership tips. General Wilson, your leadership tips resonated with me and also with many of my residents when you spoke to the residency program a few months ago. What I've done for the purpose of this interview, as you know, is roughly divide your leadership tips into two general categories, and obviously there's a lot of overlap between these two categories. But the first category is those leadership tips that address how one should behave for one's own good and also to set an example for others. And the second set is those tips that focus more on how one should consider treating and communicating with other individuals. So, General Wilson, why don't we get started by simply having you list a half dozen or so leadership tips that focus on how one should behave in order to be effective and also to set an example for others.
Good. The one qualifying remark I would make is while I have some six or seven rules for the leader's own conduct, the list could be extended to a larger number. I've simply tried to pick those that strike me as being most relevant to our conversation this morning. Up front, or at bottom, if you will, we start with the overwhelming necessity to have, to develop, a clear and shared sense of mission. That is, what it is that you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. And I say shared in that everyone should buy into this and should know what it is if you're going to have dedicated teamwork. This is an essential. I recall Henry Kissinger saying to me once, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. So upfront, a clear, concise statement of mission. Secondly, I think it's very important for the leader to set the example for subordinates. that old shibboleth, don't do as I do as I say do, is completely false and misleading. It is overwhelmingly important that the leader model the behavior and work habits that he expects from his subordinates. Third, this sounds kind of mundane, but I believe it is necessary. The leader has to attend to his own health. I think of a dentist with bad teeth and barbers who need a haircut. The leader sometimes will work himself into the ground and not pace himself as he should. It is very, very important for him to know his physical limitations and to pace himself or herself. Next, this is a tip that has always been important to me. Get started early. Each day, get started early. This has to do with the effective management of time. I recall many, many years ago when I was a junior non-commissioned officer, I believe I was a corporal, we had a grizzled old first sergeant in my rifle company who was always on top of things, never caught by surprise, always unruffled. And I was simply amazed and even puzzled at his equanimity and the fact that you never caught him off guard. I remember once when we were in a summer encampment, he was going down the country street with his clipboard and walking across the field into the woods. And I got up from my cot and I followed him out of curiosity. He went on into the woods and I went in right at the same point he entered the forest and came upon him sitting on a log in a clearing. I began to back away then. I realized I was intruding and I made a little noise and he looked up and he said, "Wilson, what the heck are you doing here?" I said, "Well, the first sergeant, I watch you all the time because you've got some practices and some capabilities that I would like to learn more about. You're always on top of things. So I'm just curious why you come out here and sit here with your clipboard on a log way early in the morning before the bugle has even blown reveille." He sort of laughed and says, "Well, Sammy, lad, let me tell you, the rest of you guys in this company are smarter than I am. So I have to get a head start on you. If I get a 2-hour head start on you each day, you won't catch me before the sun goes down." Now, I realize I had just heard an extremely important truth, and it has to do with getting started early. If you rush into work a few minutes late or an hour late and then working to catch up all day long, you really never catch up. Time lost is time that cannot be retrieved. So get started early. As I say, it has to do with the effective management of time. A very important guiding rule for leaders, since we stress leadership with an ethical basis, is simply, quote, "do right," unquote. I recall when I was growing up as a small boy on the farm, we kids would sometimes go to our mother, whom we call Miss Helen, with problems when we couldn't figure out exactly what the proper choice was for us to make in a difficult situation. And she'd simply look at us and say, "Do right." And with a long pause, we'd say, "Do right? Yeah, just do right." "Well, what do you mean? How are we going to do right in this case?" She would, and with some exasperation, would say, "Do right and shame the devil." And what she really meant was, choose the harder right over the easier wrong. I've kind of been Dudley Do Right all my life, with that one sticking right in the middle of my head. And I find that that is one of the key principles for the kinds of leaders that we in our society need, respect, and will follow. Next, it's important that the leader know the issues and take a stand, whether they are issues that affect, in this case, the healthcare institution of which one is a member, or whether we're talking about our society in general. Know the issues, be informed, and take a stand on the issues. Edmund Burke told us a couple of centuries ago, in effect, that the only thing necessary for the designs of evil men to succeed is for good men to do nothing. So know the issues and take a stand. Finally, and I believe this is especially important for people involved in the medical profession, is the guiding rule, never stop learning. keep the reading habit. Have a good book there on the night table by the bed. Never stop learning. When you stop learning, you immediately begin to regress. Now, I'll end this list, which has to do with the leader's own behavior and conduct, and move to rules for dealing with others. Remember, it's all about relationships. But I'll pause at this point, Dr. Burns, to see if you have any questions before we move to the second list.
Well, I just wanted to say I appreciate all of those, and I've heard myself reminding myself of these tips. But the one I like the most, I think, is the advice to do right in the story of your mother telling you to do right. And I can assure you that I'll be using that over the years with my children. Now, you said you grew up on the farm, and that was in Rice, Virginia?
Yes.
Okay. The other one I really like is get a head start, get started early, which is really also just do your homework. And you may not be the smartest one in the room, but if you get a head start, then the others won't catch up by the end of the day, I believe. And I really appreciate that one.
Good.
Well, I don't have any further questions about those, and I thought maybe we would move to the next set of leadership tips.
Good. These are rules for dealing with others. Mm-hmm. And as I said, remember, at bottom, again, it's all about human relationships. I would start with be an active listener. This requires practice and a sincere interest in your interlocutor. We all know people who love to talk about themselves and can't wait for you to stop talking so they can tell you more about themselves. We regard those people as bores. I regard those people as having an unfortunate handicap, because when your mouth is going, you're not learning. You're learning when your ears are straining to hear what someone is saying to you. So it requires practice. It requires sincere interest. If you're not sincere about it, you'll come across as a hypocrite. It's amazing. I have had conversations with people and been able to give them leading questions and get them to talk about themselves. I'd wind up saying very, very little myself. And then when the conversation was ended, have the individual said, "This is one of the best conversations I've had in a long time." I would smile inwardly because the individual had been carrying the ball and talking mostly about himself or herself. So remember this one, be an active listener. And tied to that one is a guideline that has to do with communications. It is extraordinarily important for the leader to communicate effectively, that he or she share knowledge with others, vertically and especially horizontally. I emphasize horizontally because horizontally is the more difficult and requires continuing command emphasis. People will inform their bosses. Sometimes they will inform their subordinates briefly, sometimes incompletely. But they tend to neglect horizontal communications to the people on either side. If you want real teamwork, you have to concentrate on communicating horizontally as well as vertically.
General Wilson, can I
please
ask a further question? I think you told me a number of years ago that one of the first things you did when you became president at Hampton Sydney was call a number of meetings and a number of gatherings so that people communicated a little bit more effectively. Do I remember that correctly?
You remember it correctly. The college was in some difficulty. It had, in the space of 3 years, it had had four presidents, and things were kind of topsy-turvy. I found that boundary lines between offices had turned into walls, and people were sort of functioning in isolation from each other, and were very, very turf-conscious, and the old business of team spirit and cooperation and so on was just about gone. So I could see from my own past experience that the first thing for me to do was to get people together, get them talking, to insist they inform their subordinates that they, of what we, each time I would have a meeting, what was discussed at that meeting, but also keep people who were interested in what they were doing and might be able to make a contribution, people on their flanks, totally informed as well. Share information, even to the extent of doing it beyond the requirement, just to make sure nothing was left out. I found that people were hungry for that kind of communication and that it raised morale considerably very early on. So this is one of the first things I check on each time I get a new leadership assignment, is this business of human communications and sharing knowledge and information with others, but horizontally as well as vertically. The next rule for dealing with others I call setting high standards and making sure people know what these standards are. That means giving clear instructions and then standing back and letting people perform on their own initiative to follow through on what it is you want done. To me, very early on in my military career, and I learned this from another grizzled old non-commissioned officer whose approach was, number one, frame your mission, your task, in the simplest possible language, fourth grade level language, few words as possible. Make sure that it is exactly what it is that needs to be done or that you want to have done. Once you get it framed, then get the people together under you and tell them what it is and tell them again and again until this mission statement is coming out of their ears. Then tell them, go do it, and then step back and sort of monitor from a discreet distance as they are carrying out the steps necessary to achieve this mission. I have found that to be very, very effective. It's very simple, a three-step leadership rule, and it means avoiding micromanagement like the plague.
The three steps, General Wilson, are set high standards, two, give clear instructions, and three, stand back.
That's right.
I translate the stand back advice as allow autonomy.
That's right.
And that's very important for
that's
one's
right.
motivation to
we,
have
we
some
call
autonomy.
This in special operations or in special forces, we call this mission type orders. It's as simple as this. We give a special forces detachment a mission, spell it out as clearly as possible. And then we have them repeat the mission back to us in their own words to make sure they got it. And at that point, we say, okay, go do it. We'll be watching from a distance. It works. It is, I think, one of the most effective management approaches that one can follow. Because what it does, once it establishes exactly what it is to be done. And secondly, it then allows the performers, the people carrying out the mission, the opportunity to use their own creative imagination, their own ideas, and so on, and it gives them a certain amount of dignity as they carry the mission out. If somebody is monitoring your every step, watching over your shoulder, it cramps your initiative. So back off. Once people know what it is you want them to do, give them a chance to do it. Another very, very important one, and it's not easy to do, is forego the credit line. Don't seek credit for what is done. An old lady at Hamden City, when I first came aboard there, said to me, if you can let others take the credit for what you've done, you can do almost anything. And this is not always easy to do because there's always someone who's grasping for unearned credit, and that's kind of brine in your mouth. But if you can really be unselfish, in this case, selfless, let the credit be spread around among others, people sooner or later realize what you're doing, that you're being selfless and that you're mission-oriented and you're not seeking to embellish or enhance your own reputation or promotion opportunities and so on. They will respect you mightily if you take that attitude. Forego the credit line. Let others have credit. Make sure credit is spread around. Next, in any bureaucracy, the healthcare institution is a bureaucracy, and I'm not using that as a pejorative term. Bureaucracies are necessary. As a member of that bureaucracy with leaders at various levels, it's important that you be aware of the problems and issues that are faced in the management system above you if you hope to inherit them someday. In other words, if you hope to rise to the level where you become responsible for these problems and issues. And it goes without saying that you need to know what is going on at levels below you. So be aware of the problems and issues that the people above you, leaders above you, face if you hope to inherit them. Next, a very self-evident thing, but frequently abused, is the old guideline, praise in public, criticize in private. There are many, many, many examples. I've seen football coaches grab a player in practice who has made a mistake and chew him practically to ribbons in front of the rest of the team. And I've seen that player just stand there and wilt as his dignity and self-respect are being stripped away from him. That is a no-no. That's a non-starter. Praise in public, but criticize in private. And then finally, it is very important to find time for fun and games. Build and sustain morale. The Army has a practice we call happy hour on Friday, late Friday afternoons, when people take off from work and sit and have a beer and laugh and talk. I brought this with me to Hamlet, Sydney in 1992 when I became the 22nd president. At 5 p.m. each Friday afternoon, out came the cheese, the wine, and crackers, and then there were songs, jokes, personal stories, and local gossip. We tried to handle these sessions with some imagination so that people laughed a lot and enjoyed themselves. This kind of happy hour can be a bonding experience. But do the little things that make people laugh, that make people enjoy themselves, that make people aware of each other socially as well as professionally on the job. Because this kind of happy hour thing, and there are other practices that will, can be a very valuable bonding experience. I think that pretty well runs the list out. Do you have any questions on these or comments on these, Dr. Burns?
No, I think they're all really great, and it's nice to hear them again, particularly the praise in public, criticize in private. General Wilson, I think those are all really, really important leadership tips. And as I've mentioned, I think they're all important. I really like the praise in public, criticize in private, and I like the three-step squad leader, set high standards, give clear instructions, and then stand back. I think those are all very important, as are the other ones. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you've spoken to our residency program, and at that time you talked a little bit about healthcare and leadership, and I'm wondering, before we conclude, if you had any comments more specific for healthcare that you'd like to add.
I guess there are some simple statements that sort of frame the subject. To me, healthcare is more than a noble profession. It is a calling, for all that that means. I think preaching, teaching, and healing, which were the three major undertakings of the son of the carpenter. These are callings. They demand more than just reporting to work on time and going through the motions. It's more than a profession. It is a calling, and that puts it at a higher level. Secondly, there may be people who feel that talking about leadership in healthcare somehow doesn't fit. They can understand leadership in the military. They can understand leadership on the football field and so on. But leadership in healthcare seems to some people to be a bit of a stretch. Healthcare institution is multi-layered, and there is a requirement for leaders at each level. And sound, effective, ethical leadership practices are essential at each of these levels for effective healthcare. So our conversation is relevant to the calling of healing. And finally, I think the prominent leadership dynamics in healthcare involved sort of as supporting pillars, dedicated professionalism, positive attitudes, and sound two-way relationships. At bottom, to me, effective leadership is all about relationships.
Well, General Wilson, that's really great. Let me conclude by just saying I once again greatly appreciate your time, and I greatly appreciate all that you've taught me and my residents. And it is a privilege, a pleasure, and an honor to speak with you today and to learn from you. So thank you very much.
You're very kind, sir. I enjoyed the conversation.